Japan 2.0.
Tell me where you want to go.
You see me on your television. You hear me on your radio. You like it where your eyes.
But tell me where you want to go.
Japan 2.0.
Tell me where you want to go.
2.0.
This is Japan 2.0. My name is Matt, and this is David. Say hi, David.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Happy to be here. It's getting pretty chilly. It's December. We're recording. We're on the rooftop.
In Osaka.
In Osaka, yeah. Got my dinner jacket on. But today we're here to talk about something I think is like living the dream for me. One of the most early, we talked about in our first episode how we fell in love with Japan. And this is like one of the things both Matt and I think both liked about Japan, which was specifically Tokyo Game Show.
Yeah, video games in general were a big influence on us. And I think it informed a lot of decisions we made in our life, which sounds kind of funny. But yeah, knowing that Japan was where a lot of our favorite video games originated, you know, made Japan in general just a place we really wanted to go visit. And a lot of times, you know, I don't know about you, but for a lot of the information I was getting about Japan and from Japan was in video game magazines, and the Tokyo Game Show was always something that I would look at the pages, and like EGM, like old EGMs would have like photos from Tokyo Game Show, and I just go over those pictures, read every word that was on those pictures, you know, memorize the pictures.
The ones coming out there, because they're Japanese games, right?
Right.
The other big show is called E3, and that's in California, or been in everywhere, but and like it's more American game focused. So the newest, coolest games at the time were always coming out at TGS, and it was a huge dream of mine as a kid to go to it, and I knew that it probably would never happen, but I was wrong.
I think it's easy to say that we both love love Japanese video games, and we probably like Japanese video games more than Western games.
For sure. Which now isn't really the cool thing to do, but it's hard. It's hard to like Japanese games today because there aren't a lot coming out.
Yeah, I don't know. Lately, we've had a couple of good ones.
And we found
MGS5, you know.
It's going to meet today's show's theme because like we went to these game shows and we're seeing what the Japanese game industry's like, and can't really compare it to 10 years ago because they weren't here 10 years ago going to these shows, but what we're here to report, I think, is that they're alive and well, and these two shows we went to this past year have been really exciting.
When did you first like realize like Tokyo Game Show was a place you could actually go to, like, I mean, or about how old were you when you first realized like Tokyo Game Show is a place you would want to go to, or
I guess
or
it was
a place that existed, or an event that existed?
I honestly think I had heard of E3 first, just because it was more local. I would say middle school, like 8th grade, maybe 12 years old, 13 years old, around there. But I didn't think I could go. I thought like you had to be in the industry or something, you know? So I always thought it was really hands-off to me. And going to California from Michigan was an unreal expectation, especially going to Tokyo from Michigan just would never happen in my mind. So it was always something I was going to have to read about or watch on G4 Tech TV back then. So like to be able to go to some of these things has been awesome. One of the ones we're going to be talking about was one that wasn't on our radar until a couple of years ago because it's brand new.
Well, yeah, it wasn't on anyone's radar until a couple of years ago.
How old were you when you realized it was a thing, a physical space you could go visit?
Yeah, so I was probably about 14, 15 when I realized that these game shows were open. I didn't know that Tokyo Game Show was open to the public until recently, to be honest. But I knew that these were places that, you know, you got to see previews of games and try new games and stuff like that. And I know Tokyo Game Show... Oh, I think it was a Nintendo Power where I first saw Space World, which was Nintendo's where they reveal the Nintendo's convention that they used to reveal all the Zelda games and N64 games and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I remember reading somewhere that like Space World was right up against Tokyo Game Show, and I think that's when it first got on my radar. And I remember seeing photos of just of RPGs and stuff that hadn't come out yet. You know, it was this is like PS, you know, PS1 era and PlayStation era, and then N64.
Yeah, it's middle school.
And
my middle school.
Yeah, there were just like a lot of games, you know, in the franchises that I knew, and like Street Fighter and Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest and stuff.
I just remember like the idea of getting to play a game a couple years early was just mind-boggling. And like, I mean, my biggest series, my biggest fandom is for a series called Shenmue. I remember having dreams of playing this game for years, like as it was in preparation, and it was like literal dreams. Like I'd wake up the next day and I'd play this game, and the fact that you could actually go out there and play them was so, so cool.
I think that at the time too, the internet wasn't as readily available as it is now.
Yeah.
At least for me it wasn't. And I didn't know about a lot of games that were coming out from Japan. You know, you really had to look at reading magazines. And so when we finally got some information out of there, it was a big deal, you know. Now, these days, it's a little less of a big deal because you see previews and watch demos and watch the trailers a million times before you go to Tokyo Game Show, probably even happens.
Yeah.
But there's still some games that get revealed, and less so now than in the heyday. I think that the Tokyo Game Show has definitely declined.
Famously
so. In the last maybe 10 years, I guess. And
decline for sure.
Yeah, and that has a lot to do with, you know, the Japanese economy. It has to do with the way video games are produced now. You know, Japan has never been in the business of making a lot of AAA games. I mean,
since graphics have become a big deal,
I mean, like, they're not spending millions, like multi-million-dollar, you know, ventures on a Japanese RPG. You know, whereas
they struggle to like keep up with the times. They're still doing what they were doing well 10 years ago. It's just a lot of people don't want that.
Right,
Matt and I do, but not everyone. But I think we should kind of outline. We're gonna talk about Tokyo Game Show first. And then we're going to talk about a much smaller and newer game festival, which is called Bit Summit.
Yeah.
So,
and Tokyo Game Show, we've had the opportunity to go, finally.
What was it? September, so 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible.
September 2015.
We were going to Tokyo anyway.
Like a bucket list item for me.
It was huge,
you know?
Yeah, we were going to Tokyo anyway. Matt texted me and was like, do you know what's going on? Like, we're going to Tokyo when something's going on. I was like, I don't know what. It was like TGS, and I was like, oh man, we're going with our wives. Matt and I have talked about going to Tokyo forever, so, and our, you know, our wives are all friends, and I was just kind of right away like, we gotta go, but like, can we go? We only have a couple of days there, and like, it's pretty selfish, and we're like, yeah, we just gotta make it happen, we gotta go. It's cheap, it was easy to get tickets. You got tickets, right?
It
was pretty easy.
Yeah, it was really easy. They have international ticket sales, so all I used was my credit card, and I bought tickets that you could print out on your printer.
Yeah.
And we printed them out and just took it to the little tent for international visitors.
Yeah, we got a special line.
That was great.
It's about 45 minutes outside of Tokyo. It's a little tricky to get to, which we're going to not talk about.
Yeah, it's near Tokyo Disney.
Yeah.
So,
on the way to Chiba.
Yeah.
But yeah, the venue is a really large place, and I would say for me, Tokyo Game Show is way bigger than I thought it'd be now. I mean, talking about the decline, I kind of thought it was going to be a small thing, maybe like one big space, like the size of
auditorium, one football field.
Is kind of what I expected. And it's probably what, 5 football fields?
Yeah,
six?
It's huge. Yeah.
I can only imagine what it was.
Convention center, and inside, it's these huge ceilings, so they hang a whole bunch of banners, and there was even like an airship from some mobile game.
So that's my highlight of Tokyo Game Show. There's some disappointments there, but the highlight is just like the promos and the displays that are built. That's awesome. It's like being at a theme park for video games.
Yeah, there were some really good ones. Ace Attorney had a really great one, which was
Monster Hunter had an awesome one. It looked like the courtroom.
You could go sit in there and try the game. Monster Hunter had had what was it, replicas of some of the animals
and some of the, there's a big panel going on there.
But,
The Last of Us, which is a game that I know David and I have been looking forward to for way too long.
Last Guardian.
Oh, The Last Guardian. The Last of Us. Yeah, The Last Guardian. That it's been so long since I've forgotten the name.
But they had the animal, the creature in a cage.
Trico is his name, right?
Trico, yeah, it has a name. He was like, but he was like computer generated and he could look at you depending on where you were. Felt like he was like a live creature in a cage.
I do think sad. That it looked a little like janky to me, to be honest.
Matt had higher expectations.
Yeah,
I thought it was cool.
Expectations, yeah.
But to be honest, though, for me, it was great, and I checked it off, and I feel good about it. But like, we didn't actually play any games there, which is crazy.
Yeah,
and it wasn't because there were long lines, and it was really crowded. But there wasn't really anything that playable that I felt the need to play.
I feel like, you know, my expectations were I was going to go to the Tokyo Game Show and I was going to enjoy, like, a lot of, demos and try things that I've never tried and see things that I hadn't seen before. But I think in the internet age, I think it's just harder to be surprised. And when I got there, I saw a lot of games that I've known about for a long time.
It was cool to see them on a big screen and watch the trailer and like see the people dressed up like them who work there, but you're not gonna wait to play the game. They weren't even playable, actually.
And the game like The Last Guardian, which is a game that I would be excited
to
play,
2 hours
didn't have a demo, you know? So, I mean, maybe it was this year, but I felt like I think some of the appeal.
Persona 4, we were kind of disappointed.
Yeah, Persona 5.
5.
5. Now you made your mistake.
It didn't really have a presence. We saw a little flyer, and we were searching for like an hour to find the flyer even, and we couldn't find it.
Yeah, I wanted to see the trailer, you know, on the big screen, and I couldn't even find that. I mean, there were a lot of games to play, and there were a lot of people waiting in line. Street Fighter 5 was there. I would have liked to have played that, but, to me, it became apparent while I was there that it's such a busy, busy place. There's so many people in there. And, you know, there's so many things to see. To spend an hour or 2 hours to play a game, I don't know if it would be worth it.
If I lived in Tokyo, I would go every year.
Yeah.
Because it's cheap. It was easy enough to get to. The line wasn't a big deal. I would definitely go. Like, why not?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Walk around. It wasn't that expensive. It was, I think, maybe 20... under 2,000 yen.
Oh, I think yeah, 10 or 15 bucks.
Yeah.
But for us, like, where we live, you know, it's a hike to get out there. I don't know. I'd feel the need. I would go again in, like, maybe four or 5 years. But I kind of feel like I did it. I saw it. I know what it's like. It's cool. But, yeah, the internet covers the games pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. It was cool to see, and I'm glad I did it. Like I said, it was something on my bucket list that I was able to check off. But there is one thing that's
one
very
thing
unique.
We haven't talked about
and
this.
That,
coolest
that
thing.
Is the best thing about Tokyo Game Show and is worth waiting in lines for.
Yeah, we did wait a long time, didn't we? Yeah.
And that is all the merchandise.
Yes.
Yes.
It's not free. I was going to say swag, but that means it's free. No, yeah. We had to wait a long time, and it's, I don't know, it's a little bit expensive, but it's definitely worth it because they offer unique stuff. We had done an episode about Dendon Town. Go check that out. And there's game shops there, but this is stuff, some of it you can find there, but there's a lot. For me, I'm a big Sega guy, old school Sega guy, and I could get all these great Dreamcast shirts, their Shinmue shirts, Genesis shirts.
It seemed like the companies Capcom, Square, Sega.
Those
they
are
all
big
brought
three,
yeah. They all brought their A game. Yeah, mm-hmm. They bring a lot of items that are specific to like Tokyo Game Show,
really,
or at least something
like
that they
cult following. Yeah.
Yeah, their newest and their latest merchandise. My wife and I are big Dragon Quest fans, so we waited in the Square booth and. It was really cool. They had like a lot of the high quality Square action figures. They had clothing like
cookies.
Apparel, slippers. We bought some Dragon Quest cookies. We also got what else did we get there? We got a Dragon Quest mug that we've been looking for a long time. And it was
there's a shoe shop. They had Dreamcast shoes.
Yeah.
Were they Super Nintendo too? Famicom? Where are the crazy shoes?
Yeah, so there was a place that was selling like these different types of shoes, and they were all video game themed. There was the Tokyo Game Show swag spot, and that one didn't have the biggest line. Actually, you could probably get there pretty quick, but they did have some cool T-shirts. I like some of the designs. I kind of regret not getting one, actually, to be honest.
When we go back, save something. There was a Game Center CX shop. Which was cool with their
That was a disappointment
I love that show. Check it out if you don't know it.
Yeah, Game Center CX is a show where a Japanese comedian plays Nintendo games and
it's almost as punishment. He's not good at them.
Very difficult video games. Yeah, and he's average at best. Yeah, he's average gamer. Yeah,
I'd say at best he's average.
Average at best, yeah. And his show is really great. And I recommend everybody watch it, but it was disappointing to see that like their swag was all sold out, and
the lame stuff is left.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna do 2 days, like bring a crate of that stuff, you know.
Yeah, we went on day 2, though, right?
We did go on the second day, so maybe the first day, you know, things are better stocked. But it seemed like Square had everything. They weren't sold out of much, you know. They had a couple, I think, Final Fantasy. Action figures or statues that were sold out, but other than that, like almost everything else was still available.
But that's pretty much TGS in a nutshell. At least the modern day version. Maybe we'll do an episode in a couple of years. Maybe it'll be different. But
I'd like to go back. I'd like to next time I go back, you know, hopefully I could spend the full day there and a little more time. You know, our time in Tokyo was short, so there was a little bit of pressure, you know, like...
We got there later than we wanted to.
I wouldn't mind to do a leisurely trip around Tokyo Game Show, but yeah, I don't know if I'd go all the way to do it, so we'll see if we go next year. And that is our review of Tokyo Game Show.
Up next, we're going to get to you about Bit Summit, a much less known game show, but I think a game show Matt and I both enjoy more. So look forward to that glowing review.
Yep. And we'll see you after the break. Welcome back. In this segment, I'm going to talk about a myth that I've heard many times in many blogs or books about Japan.
Debunking the myth.
And I'm debunking this myth, okay? It's toilets, public toilets. So when I started researching Japan, I thought that one of the things I'd have a hard time doing is finding public toilets, because a lot of times books like The Lonely Planet and stuff say, you know, be careful about toilets. You might find squat toilets everywhere, or you might not have toilet paper, or it might just be hard to find a public toilet. And in my experience, that's not true. In our last episode, we talked about convenience stores. And convenience stores often have a public toilet that's available. It's not always true. Some places don't have them.
Yeah, about 60 or 70% chance.
Yeah, I'd say about 60%. Yeah. A lot of times if there's a tall building that has multiple stories and has a restaurant inside, you could usually find a public toilet in there too.
This is such a Matt topic, by the way. On our previous show, Two Crew Mondays, we had a segment called Your Favorite Thing About Korea, and you said your favorite thing was the availability of toilets. How does that compare to Korea?
Well, I think...
Availability.
I think here, I think public toilets are much nicer, to be honest. I think they're well-maintained.
This whole segment, you've thrown me in a loop, because I thought for sure... I thought the reason why Japan's famous with toilets is having, like, the most amazing toilets in the world. I thought you were going to tell me that they weren't good. I was going to have to fight you on this. So I'm really glad you didn't go in that direction.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to have to have our first fight.
No, there wasn't going to be a fight about this. Because, my first trip to Tokyo, like, I was really expecting... I read something that said when somebody is giving you tissues to take
them.
To keep them.
I heard that about Korea. I've never heard that about Japan. But yeah. I'm sure, yeah, it's true.
And there are a lot of people that are giving you flyers or things like that, and they give you they'll give you a pack of tissues with it, and so I've kind of gotten the habit of collecting those. In fact, I have way too many tissues right now. Like I was looking through a drawer the other day, and I had to like stockpile, you know.
Ready for the cold season.
But yeah, I've never had to. It seems like every toilet I've been to is very, very clean.
Incredible. You have bidets.
You have bidets.
I would have used them on a public toilet.
Although I did have a bidet accident the other day.
Let's hear it.
So I went into a toilet and it had a lot of kanji. Yeah. There weren't a lot of, there wasn't any English writing of the buttons.
There's all these buttons. That's different from probably back home. There's no just lever.
Like, usually they have a lever in the back. I find like most toilets have a lever in the back, but
I don't do the lever.
I'll do the lever if I see it. Yeah. But sometimes there's buttons to press to get your toilet to flush, right? I heard a story from my mother-in-law when she came to Japan. She went into a toilet and she couldn't find any button or anything that indicated a flush, so she hit whatever button was biggest, and the bidet started, and water shy everywhere.
And that's what happened. You know what's coming.
That's what happened to me the other day, where I was in the toilet, and
you don't normally use it, right?
So people were. I don't usually use the bidet. There's occasions where I do, okay, but it's very personal, you know. It's very personal.
I always use it at my house. Yeah, I've never used it in a public one personally.
Too I've dirty. Used it at hotels and stuff before, but yeah, really it depends. Yeah. It depends. I wasn't planning on using it this day. I was just trying to flush, and I really couldn't find the flush button, and I don't know the kanji for flush. That's one that I should learn. But I made a big mess. And the thing was, I was in a department store, and so I waited in a long line to get into the toilet. You know, it was like two or three guys, which. You know, as long for men's line. For women, the lines are much longer. I'm sorry, ladies. Yeah. But, it's just...
Facts of life.
Facts of life are that there's always a line out the door for the women's toilet. My wife is... Yeah, I mean, she gets furious every time she has to use a toilet at a department store. Yeah. But...
So anyway, it gets you wet.
Yeah, but anyways, it was really wet, and the water got everywhere. And, I avoided it. I stood by the wall. But when I opened the door, luckily nobody else was in there. And I was like, oh, good, because there was no way.
How high did it squirt out? I've always wondered. It squirted. Because I think they're powerful. Like, they hit the ceiling.
Over my head. I'd say like 6 feet. Yeah. Like over 6 feet.
Wow.
And, it was a mess. Anyways... toilets—they're available everywhere. Don't let anybody tell you different. Toilets do exist in Japan.
Yeah, but they're usually an option.
Yeah.
Get ready for this announcement.
We're leaving this in, people.
Whoever can tweet us where we are when we're recording this episode, we'll get a prize.
Yeah, we'll shout to your Twitter name, Twitter handle, all right?
Next time.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, this is the end of this segment, you know, myth busted, you know? Yeah. Japan's got toilets. All right, we're back, and now we're going to talk about another video game convention, and it's called Bit Summit.
Yeah, yeah.
The Independent Video Game Summit
in Kyoto, Japan.
In Kyoto, Japan. Yeah.
And this one, the timing's been different. The one we went to just previously, I think, was the third one this happened, and I had gone to the second one before you, and it was earlier in the spring. But the third one was the summertime, right?
Yeah, the beginning of summer. Yeah.
Like May, June, I want to say. So if you are actually interested in going, which would be awesome, let us know. Maybe we'll meet you there at the next one, because this one's in our hood. But, yeah, check out the time for sure. We had a hard time even finding the time. They kind of announced it a little bit last minute.
Yeah, I think that's it's such a small convention that they do announce it kind of like when they could get the convention center. Mm-hmm. And so I think that about a month before is when we started being able to find some of the information about it. But
they have a really great site if you just go to BitSummit.com. But it's awesome, like the way it's been designed, and that's kind of the whole flavor of BitSummit. Like, it's just really well done, cool graphics for it. The logo is this cool superhero guy. Really nice videos recorded about it too. We're big fans of a translation company called, localization company called 8-4. James Milkey of EGM, who Matt was talking about earlier, he's big into that. Like, he puts it on, I think. So, like, really good people doing it. It's the complete opposite of TGS in every way.
Yeah.
Besides this Japanese game.
And I think for a little context, you know, Japan has not really been known for independent video games or indie games.
Yeah. Last place, really.
Yeah, they really... I feel like part of the reason is because, like, video game companies almost act as independent game companies still. You know, like, they are these guys that might be a small team of video game creators. Like, a company like Namco or something, they might have, like, a small team working on a game compared to, like, a team that does... an Activision game, you know, or a Ubisoft game, or a Rockstar game.
It's a good perspective. I always just thought it's the way Japan does business. Japan's very unique in the business world, and I'm not really a business guy. I'm not going to give you any amazing insight here, but I think they're just pretty old school in the way they do it, and a lot of the cheaper prices for the indie games and, like, free-to-play model, or even paying, like, $5 for a game just doesn't work here. Even living in Japan, buying games, you're going to pay $80 for a Japanese game, the same game that's sold for $60 back home. So I think the indie model in general, it's like low cost, low value, just doesn't really meet the Japanese business model. I think that's another part of it. But I like what you said. I've never really thought of that before, but it's true. I do think the Japanese studios are smaller than the Western studios.
Yeah, maybe that it kind of that grassroots feeling, you know, that, I mean... that pioneered the video game industry in Japan is what keeps it kind of like, if you get into programming or video games, you probably can get it. Maybe you can get a job at, like, a company like Namco or Capcom or any of the number of game companies that are out here. And you still are working on with small teams and stuff. So I think, you know, somebody working by themselves to make a game might be, maybe that's a little less appealing for somebody who's trying to get into the game industry.
I want to say it's called Doujin. Don't quote me on that one. But the PC market is, like, where the indie game started here. That being said, no one in Japan plays games on PCs, really. It's definitely the smallest market. But that's where it started. I think it started.
And it's a dark market. Yeah, it, like, the history and stuff, yeah, is like hentai games and things like that. So, but that being said, like, I think that independent games are on the rise here. And
sure.
I haven't gone to the early Bit Summits. You've been to two, I've heard that it's been growing each year.
The difference between the third one, which we just went to, and the second one is, like, tremendous. It was in the same space, but it was pretty hard to even recognize. And the fact that, like, some of the people that were there, you know?
I mean, Shuhei Yoshida. Yeah.
That is incredible. I mean, that's a pretty big start for them. He gave a little speech there. The rapper guy, I don't know his name. He was there the previous year I went, which was awesome, and he did a concert. But Bit Summit is just alive. You get a lot of chances to talk to the people, which to me as an antisocial person is kind of intimidating, because when you play the game, the creator's sitting right there and they kind of want you to play for a while, and like you just want to go around and play everything, you know, and like sometimes after like 5 minutes I realize, yep, this game's not for me. If you see this person who's so excited to watch you play their game, you have a hard time like putting it down. Even the game I liked the most, which was called Vayne, was that the name of it?
Yeah, Vayne.
It was some of the ex Team Eco guys. Like that game was awesome. I love it. I'm gonna buy it. But like it just kept going on and on and on. And just the setting of a games expo for me isn't the best setting to really play a game. And
especially
I kinda just wanna save it.
An open world game like this game is, where you turn into like a bird and then you turn into a person and you're exploring things. You know, you don't really get a lot of time to explore things. And
it's kind of rushed. You got a line behind you. And 10 minutes in, I was like, all right, yep, I'm sold. I want to buy this game. But I don't know if I was good at it. It's not really a game you can, like, die in that easily. But it just kept going, and I kept finding new stuff. And they were so excited. Like, oh, no one's done this yet. And I just wanted to stop.
And play and play some other games.
Yeah, play something else and just save it for the game when I could appreciate it and listen to the soundtrack at home. And
on the flip side, when you're playing a game that's really terrible, the person is right there. And you're like, well, what is the point of this game? Or I played one game that was a little bit, I think it was, I've never played Patapon, but I think it was kind of based on Patapon. It was like these characters that were walking in a straight line, and you had to get them to the end by doing some tapping on a cell phone, phone.
Right, yeah.
And the game was terrible. Like, I mean, I won't mention its name, but I had such a hard time like getting it to respond, and I didn't realize. Like, there wasn't a language barrier or anything, you know? It was just really...
You hear or see the alert. Please be prepared for strong shaking and take measurements to protect yourself. We hope you follow these instructions. Thank you.
Does that mean there's gun?
Well, my phone didn't go off. So in Japan, your phone should notify you if you have an earthquake.
Bit Summit, pretty good, right?
I would go back. Yeah, TGS. I'd go back. It's more personal, and I appreciate.
There's an energy there. I mean, TGS definitely has an energy too.
But it's very corporate. Yeah, TGS feels very corporate. It feels
like
very much like
living in a commercial.
Yeah, like nobody has a stake. Like all the people that are selling the games, you know, there's booth babes and like people handing out flyers and bags and stuff, and they look like they don't want to be there, you know. Because they're just paid to be there and hand you a controller.
Yeah.
But
there's no booth babes at a Bit Summit at all. It's all, like, the nerdy guys who made the games, you know?
Yeah.
But we got to meet some of our favorite people, you know, in the industry and, like, talk to them one-on-one for a long, not just, like, 2 minutes, like, a lengthy amount of time. So it's very, it's really nice. Intimate is a good word for it. There's concerts going on there, too. There's talks going. It's awesome.
I
don't know what's going on here. I think we're going to wrap up to ensure our safety.
And if Kansai has a big earthquake and you hear about it, you heard about it here first.
But come out to Japan. Come check out the game expos. There's big and small, all different kinds. Kyoto to Tokyo. Anything else you want to say? Final word on game expos in Japan?
I think they're great. I think you should come to them. You get a lot of... one thing that I didn't mention is you do get a lot of flyers and stuff, and sometimes they have good artwork and stuff. And I say TGS, I really brought home a couple of like little pamphlets and stuff that had behind-the-scenes stuff. And so I recommend that if you come, you know, expect to take home a bag with you. So maybe you should bring a backpack.
Yeah,
that's my advice.
So I'm going to introduce our song. I don't actually know the name yet, so you'll be surprised by the name, but the band has so many good choices that I'm going to have to sit down and think about it. But it's probably, could be my favorite band name of all time, and it's Seagull Screaming Kisser Kisser.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually didn't know about them before I moved to Japan. I bought an album called Revolta, which is a side project with the singer and the DJ from a hip-hop group I love called Shaka Zombie. and there was a George Michael's cover of Faith on there that was wild. Just the production value of that packaging was really great too. So I checked out.
Nice white vinyl too.
White vinyl, yeah. So I checked them out, and they're just Seagull Screaming Kissy Kissy. It's a very punk rock vibe. It's a great, we love Shibuya K. A lot of the bands we're going to be choosing will be Shibuya K. They're a great example. Bad vocals, it's in the, all in English, but they're so bad that they're good. Very much like a do-it-yourself, a low aesthetic vibe. Songs to me are just catchy. They just kind of chant and repeat the same simple lyrics, and they get caught in my head. Different from like a Shonen Knife kind of vibe. There's a lot of Shonen Knife ripoffs or bands like that.
They're similar,
but less Ramones-y. I guess Those other ones are all like the Ramones power chords. This is a garage kind of sound more.
Yeah.
But they're great. A lot of good songs. So look forward. You'll find the name in the show notes. I'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, one more time. Just gotta say that name. Seagull Screaming Kisser Kisser. Enjoy the sweet sounds.
All right, and last of it, you know, check us out on Twitter. We're Japan 2.0. You can send us emails at japan2.0@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter as well. I'm Matt at Unitabilist. That's UNITABLIST. Yeah. David?
I'm Wowza, WOWZAJDNIII. So tweet us personally if you want, if you have your favorite Japan 2.0, or if you love us both equally, just tweet us at Japan 2.0.
Yeah, please rate us on iTunes, and let us know what you think. You know, if you have any comments or you have any ideas for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. You know, remember, we have our little contest going on. Translate contest. If you translate the earthquake warning,
yes,
we'll give you a shout.
Yeah. They said it in English, but I'll take that part.
That's
out.
That's cheating.
I'll take that part out. But we can't wait to hear back from you guys and build a community about the obscure Japan that we love.
So until next time, enjoy Seagull Screaming Kisser Kisser.
Yeah. Peace out.
Peace. This is a scam which I don't like. I've been fed up with it, so I wanna change my life. I'm asking you, mom, tell me, is there something new? Mom say what you want, do what you want, decide what you want next. Say what you want, say what you want, decide what you do next. I was in school, nobody was my friend. Enemy was all around. Say what you want, do what you want, decide what you want next. Say what you want, do what you want, decide what you do now. What I didn't like about my school is the lunch they feed, it's pretty suck. I just hate that messy to messy lunch, it's too messy, just too messy. Say what you want, do what you want, decide what you do next. Say what you want, do what you want, decide what you do next. Say what you want, do what you want, decide what you do next. Say what you want, do what you want, decide what you do now. Mom, I wanna eat my lunch, no school lunch. I wanna eat my lunch, I wanna eat my lunch. Mom, I wanna eat my lunch, no school lunch. Lunch.